Welcome to the first shiur of the new year, and very glad to have you here. We are starting in the middle of Perek Hazav, the fourth chapter above Metzia. We are on Mem Tes Amud Beis to begin, 49b, and working our way forward from there. That's where the topic of Ona'a starts. We'll discuss what Ona'a is momentarily. But we'll be looking first at Ona'as Mamon, meaning Ona'a in commerce, and then Ona'as Devarim, verbal Ona'a, and then move eventually into the fifth perek, which is Ezehu Neshech, which focuses on ribis, issues of lending and charging interest. Ona'a as a whole, the term Ona'a itself, there's some debate as to exactly what this word means and where it comes from. I believe that the most likely etymology is from Aleph Vav Nun, which is a term that's used for a person's strength or a person's essence. Reuven is described by Yaakov as Kochi Vereshis Oni, my strength and the first of my product. And the word hon, which is wealth, is linked to it as well. And as I understand it, the general term ona'a means the use of one's self over somebody else, of one's strength over somebody else. Whether that is ona'as mamon in commerce, where I take advantage of somebody else's ignorance and overpower them financially, or whether we're talking about ona'as devarim, where I use my words to harm somebody else. I believe that's a proper etymology of it. It's supported by the entry in Milon HaTanach by Rabbi Yoshua Steinberg and others. You will also note the word ona'a is written in Hebrew, Aleph Vav Nun Aleph He. The Rambam, though, favors Honaya, starting with a hey, and that's something you'll see as well. In any case, we are starting with Ona'as Mamon, commercial Ona'a. So in order to get this topic, you have to begin with the psukim that are involved. What is it that we're talking about? So I refer you on the sheet to source Aleph. And I, of course, just closed it on my sheet for some reason. There we go. Okay. It's from Parshas Behar. After the Torah gives us the laws of Yovel and land reverting to its original owner in year 50, the Torah says, "Bishnas Yovel azos tashuvu ish al achuzaso." In the Yovel year, the land returns back, well, each person returns to his portion, to his ancestral land. And this is referring to land in Israel that had been owned by the Shvatim, by the tribes, and was taken by the different families. And the Torah says, right after that, when you make a sale to your friend, or you purchase from your friend, do not engage in ona'a one against the other. And it doesn't tell you what ona'a is. It just says, don't engage in ona'a against each other. According to the number of years after Yovel, you shall acquire from your friend. According to the number of crops, the years of crops, he shall sell to you. And the way we understand that is in tandem with the next pasuk, which says, Lefi rov hashanim tarbe miknaso, based on the number of years, you shall increase his purchase. Lefi ma'ot hashanim tamit miknaso, if there are only a few years, you shall reduce the purchase, meaning the price. Ki mispar tivos hu mocher lach, because he's selling you a certain number of crops. In other words, since you know that when I buy your land, it's going back to you in Yovel, adjust the price to reflect the fact that when the Yovel year comes, every 50 years, the land is going to revert to the original owner. So if you're selling it to me and there are 5 years to go, charge me less. If you're selling it to me and there are 40 years to go, charge me more. But it has to reflect the actual value that I'm going to get from the field. And then a reiteration, velo sonu ishes amiso, do not engage in ona one against his friend. V'yareisa me'alokecha, you shall revere God. Ki'ani Hashem alokechem, I am Hashem your God. That's the basic, here, take this chair here. That's the basic source in the psukim. Now, we have to go through those psukim a little bit more carefully shortly, because that passage is going to include not only ona'as mamon, but also ona'as devarim, the issue of verbal abuse, and some other things as well. So we need to get a better understanding of it, but the basic mitzvah of ona'as mamon is a prohibition against selling somebody property for more than it is worth, more than he's going to get out of it, or buying from somebody and paying less than what that person would get out of it, where the other party is unaware of the way that they are being cheated. So if you take a look at the Sefer HaMitzvos, I bought it in Beis, it says, Lo Sase Reish Nun, Prohibition 250, HaMitzvah Reish Nun, Hishi Hizhiranu Mehonos Ksaseinu Es Ksaseinu Bischara B'mekach U'memkar. Mitzvah 250 is that one may not abuse another person in purchase, in commerce, and they quote the Pasuk, V'chisim Kruim Kar, etc., and he quotes the Sifra as well, and he says, go look in the fourth parak in Bava Mitzvah if you want more information. In source Gimel, the Sefer HaChinuch adds a note in his Shoresh HaMitzvah, when he talks about the lessons of the mitzvah, he says, Shoresh HaMitzvah Yadua, he says, you know why we have this. Ki Udavar She'aseichel Meyed Olav. It's logical, he says. V'imlo Nichtav Din Husheye Kasev. And if it had not been recorded in the Torah, if there wasn't a biblical prohibition against doing this, logically it would have to have been written, meaning we would have had to introduce it. She'ein ro'i lakachas mamon b'nei adam derech sheker v'tarmis. He says it's inappropriate to take somebody else's property via lies and deception, right? Which is what you're engaging in if you sell it to him for more than it's worth. Ela kol echad yizkeh ba'amalo b'meshechanenu elokim ba'olamo b'emes b'yosha. You get what you deserve. You get what Hashem chooses to give you, and you get it righteously, and don't try to get things that are inappropriate. If you wanted to look this up in the Rambam, you would look in Hilchos Mechira, Laws of Sales, chapters 12 and 13, in the Shulchan Aruch, Etz Choshen Mishpat, Reish Chav Zayin, 227, and then there are related topics that surround that in Choshen Mishpat.
Are there topics that also discuss how it's valued?
We are going to have to discuss an awful lot. Hold on 1 minute. I'm going to talk about what we have to talk about. The basic rule that we follow is the following. If the price is off from the accepted standard, and again, I'm using the words accepted standard without having defined them, but if the price is off of the accepted standard by less than 1/6, and when we say 1/6, what that means is 1/6 including the actual price. So in other words, 1/5 is really what you want to say. So for example, if the proper price is $100, $20 is your threshold. 1/5 of 100, which is 1/6 of the 100 plus the offset. You follow? So 1/6 is 20%. Just remember that and you'll be fine.
So what is that 1/6
from? So we have to talk about that too. The basic rule is that if it's off by less than 1/6, the sale is valid and the difference is ignored. It may be prohibited to do that. That's something that I want to get to today. But that's the fundamental rule. If it's off by precisely 1/6, then we have to talk about what precisely 1/6 actually means. Is that to the penny? Then that's called ona'a. The sale is valid, but you have to refund the 1/6. If it's off by more than 1/6, the sale is void. Batal mekach. Now, we need to discuss, among other things, what exactly the threshold of ona'a is. What does this 1/6 mean? Where does it come from? And so forth. The challenge of working with set prices in our day, right, where you have, you know, government subsidies for certain items, but really the only thing in Toronto that has a set price that I could easily identify is gasoline. That's really it. Where all the gas stations have the same price, except for the one that's 0.3 cents above, you know, below the others, you know, by Bathurst Lawrence. That's it. And so is the general rule. Maybe gas has a set price. What about where the set price doesn't reflect its ongoing value? What if there's a particular sale that's going on right now? What if it's going to be worth more later? The Beis HaMikdash Yerushalayim case that you were talking about. What if your research shows its true value, but the other guy doesn't know about it, right? You had geological surveys done, and you know there's oil beneath the land. He thinks what he has is a vacant lot, and you know he has an oil well. So how do we deal with that? The question of variation in prices due to particular locations. Right? If you live in a big city, there will be variations in price as opposed to someone who lives in a small town. Right? There are more goods available, there's more competition available, and so forth. On the other hand, things are sold more expensively in higher priced areas than they're sold elsewhere. Right? If you go to certain communities, you will find the same product at a higher price than you will find it sold for in the inner city. It's the nature of things. So we have to talk about that as well. And we have to talk about the application of these rules to particular cases. Land, for example, salaries. What if I hire somebody to do a job for me and there's a known going rate? Let's say tutoring costs, I'm going to make up a number, $50 an hour. But somebody says that I'm going to hire a tutor. I'm not going to tell him that it's 50. I'm going to just tell him, yeah, I think the going rate is 30 and I'm going to pay him 30. And he won't know any better. So is that also an issue of onah, or do we say that salaries are a different story? So what I want to do is just, you know, for our overview, is discuss the nature of returning onah of 1/6, which will also address along the way the nature of the mitzvah itself. What is this idea that when you're, I understand that if you tell me it's inappropriate to overcharge people, right? So you'll tell me that up to a certain point is not called overcharging, and therefore you can get away with it. More than that point is overcharging, and now you have the right to reverse the sale. But what's this weird 1/6 thing in the middle where we say return the overcharging, right? Or again, the underpaying, because it works the other way also, and the sale is valid. What in the world is going on with this? I mean, there's a lot more that we have to discuss. We're going to, yeah, I spent enough time telling you what we're going to discuss. Let's discuss something. So I want to start with two debates between Rav and Shmuel in the Gemara and Bava Metzia, both found in the Gemara that's in the Mar Makomos, as well as a third Gemara that we have to see along the way, and that will set us up. If you take a look at source Dalet on your sheets, the very first Mishnah that we deal with is on Mem Tes Amud Beis. It says Ha'ona Arba'a Kesef Me Esim Ve'Arba'a Kesef Lesela. Shtus lemekach. Ona'a is 4 silver coins when 24 silver coins make up a sela. Okay? 4 silver coins when 24 make up a sela. In other words, 1/6 is what he's trying to say. I don't want to get hung up on the mechanics and the currency exchanges. We will have to talk about the different currencies at some point. But right now, we're talking about 1/6 of the mekach, 1/6 of the purchase. So on that, in the Gemara, we see there are actually two views. One is Rav, one is Shmuel. The Gemara says, Itmar, Rav Amar Shtus Mekach Shaninu. Rav says, when you calculate 1/6, that means 1/6 of the value of the item, as opposed to 1/6 of the purchase price. And to give you, you know, what that means, because I in the source sheet I skipped the Gemara where they actually walk you through the cases. So let's say you have an item that is worth 6, and you sell it to somebody else for 7. So if I go buy, so you sold it for 1 more than it is worth, that we know. So if I go by what it's worth, then onah is 1/6 of 6, which is to say 1. And when I sold it to him for 7, that's onah. However, if I go by 1/6 of the purchase price, if I say if your price is more than 16% over the thing, that's when you're in trouble, or at 16% more, that's when you're in trouble, then it's 1/6 of 7, right? 7/6, in other words, 1.1666, etc. That's your threshold, in which case, by selling him a 6 for 7, I haven't engaged in onah, it's still below the threshold to be problematic. You see the difference between the two. It's either 1/6 of its value or 1/6 of the purchase price. Rav says it's 1/6 of the item's value, what the item is actually worth. That's called mekach. And Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel amar shtus maos nami shaninu. That word nami is the most important word in this entire sugya. Shmuel says it's not only shtus mekach, it's also shtus maos, meaning that We also work with 1/6 of the purchase price. And the Gemara then walks you through different cases where the Gemara wants to say is the following. According to Shmuel, we balance between both sides, gravitating towards saying, just refund the difference. We want you to end up at 1/6, Shmuel says. And whether that means working with shtus mekach, or that means working with shtus maos, value or purchase price, we want you to end up with refunding the 1/6 rather than forgiving the difference or being mevatel the mekach, reversing the transaction. The Gemara then tries to prove that Shmuel is correct, and it brings a brisa. Tanya kavase de Shmuel. Brisa supporting Shmuel. Mi shehutal alav yada alah elyona, the person who has had ona'a done to him is going to have the upper hand in deciding what to do. Ketzad, what does that mean? Machar lo shava chamisha b'shisha. He sold me something that was worth five, but he charged me six. Minis ane. So who has been harmed by this? Lokeach, the buyer, right? Yad lokeach al ha'ayona. He has the upper hand. Ratza omer tenli ma'osai, o tenli ma'sha'onisani. He can say, give me back my money, or he can say, just give me the difference. Right? The where it was five, and it was sold to him for six. Now, you're saying that he can choose to call it ona'a, or he can choose to call it bitul mekach. Right? That's up to him. If I go with the value of the item, it was worth five. So ona'a is 5/6. So it's bitul mekach. That's it. The sale should be void. However, we're willing to go with ma'os, what you paid, which was six, and therefore ona'a is one, and that's exactly what happened, and therefore it was an ona'a case. That's one side. Then the other is machar lo shava shesh b'chamesh. What if you sold him something worth six, but you sold it to him for five? So, in other words, the seller lost. It's the mocher, it's the seller who lost. Yad mocher al yona, so he has the upper hand. Rotza omer lo tenli mikhi, he can say, pay me, you know, give me back the item to begin with. Oh, tenli masha onisani, or give me that which you cheated me, but we're gonna keep the sale. That's the other possibility. So again, right? No, bagasha. Adif. Bishvili adif. You have the choice of either one. The six, if you sell it to him for six, so ona'a is 1/6. Ona'a is one, and that's what this case is. It's an ona'a case. However, in the event that you sell it to him for, I'm sorry, but in the event that you're going to go buy the other way around, it was worth six and you sold it to him for five. So if you go by what it was worth, then it's an ona'a case precisely. It's 1/6. If on the other end you're going to go by what he paid, right, then it's 5/6, and this is bitul mekach. The sale should be void. And by offering either choice, what we're saying is not like Rav, who was locked in. This is what ona'a is, but rather the more flexible approach of Shmuel, it can go either way. That's the idea. So the Brisa supports Shmuel's view. That's one discussion. So the debate is not, is there ona'a, is there not ona'a? We think. The debate is, at what threshold do you reverse the sale? At what threshold do you say refund the difference? That's what it appears right now. Follow? Clear? Okay, I know this is too slow for the people who saw this in prep time, but not everyone had a chance to see it, so I'm trying to make sure that for the overview sheer, everybody's on board. The source hay is the second debate between Rav and Shmuel. Itmar, we learned. Ha'omer l'chaveru al-manas she'en l'cha alai ona'a. What if I sell you, right? I sell Pesach, I don't know what it is, fill in the blank, some item. And I say, al-manas she'en l'cha alai ona'a. It is on the condition that you cannot claim ona'a from me. There might be ona'a. There might not be ona'a. But I want to, you know, it's like one of those standard things, right? The software waivers, when you download the software and you don't read all the things that it warns you about, right? So one of the things in there is you can't claim ona'a later. So the question is that valid? Rav Amar Yeshlo ona'a. Rav says, doesn't work. He can still come back and say, you overcharged me. Ushmuel Amar Ein Lo Alav ona'a. And Shmuel says, no, then there's no ona. There is, you can waive ona. And then the Gemara goes into possibility of waiving rights in other situations, the woman who gets married and so forth. Yeah, Pesach.
Mishnah Bava Kama says,
yeah.
You can't do that with Hezek or Shiki.
So
isn't that a form of Hezek and a Hezek Mama? And he talks about whether it's good for whether it's Mama. You can't do it. You can't
waive
yourself out of it.
So Nezek is actually different from ona. I would not put ona and nezek in the same category. One reason why I wouldn't put them in the same category, you're going to see in the next piece of Gemara actually, is that ona, the person enters into a transaction knowingly. He may not know that you're cheating him, but he knows what's going on. I would not necessarily equate the two.
So there the Mishnah talks about what if someone says, in a bizarre case, it says, you should punch me and don't worry, I won't sue you for it.
Right.
And his money. So there also have that.
Right, but once again, there's a second issue, which is you don't have the right to harm yourself. That's a separate issue in the Gemara in Bava Kamma. So that also has to be taken into consideration. Okay, so that's our second machlokes Rav and Shmuel, and that seems to be a debate about, so will onah apply or not in such a case, and it goes through to Nanalaf Amid Beis. One other Gemara that we have to see on this is the one I just referenced to Pesach, and that's Samach Aleph Amid Aleph. Amar Rava, Lamali Dekasav Rachmana Lav Beribis Lav Begeza Lav Be'onah. Rava says, you know, this is from the beginning of Ezehu Neshech, it's the next parak, but that's okay, we can still do it. Rava says, you have a separate prohibition against ribis, charging somebody interest, and against gezel, stealing from somebody, and against onah, right? Maybe you could have sort of, shortened this a little bit, and one could have taught you the other. Why is it that these are all separate categories of financial harm? So he says, Tzricha, you need all three. Had the Torah just said, don't lend money and charge interest, I would have said, well, that's a novelty. I would have said, ribis is unique, because in the ribis case, not only is the lender liable, but the borrower is liable. If you borrow on interest, you're also liable. That's unique. No one would say that for theft, that the victim of theft is liable. No one would say for onah, if I buy something and go along with the fact that he cheated me, no one's going to say, well, there actually is a discussion about Lifnei Iver possibilities, but I'm going to skip the Lifnei Iver consideration. It's not, I'm not called a participant in Ona'a for the fact that he got away with cheating me. So that's different. The Ikas of Rachmana Lav Begezel, had the Torah simply said, don't steal, I would not have learned Ona'a from there, Mishum de Baal Karche, because it's against his will. That the theft is. Avalo na imalo. But ona, I may not willingly be cheated, but I willingly engage in a transaction. So it's not the same, he says. V'ikasav rachmana lav be'ona, and if you'll tell me the ona case and extrapolate from there, I'll say no. Mishum de lo yada de machil. I would have said the ona case is not the same. I could not learn from ona to theft. Because in Onah, he doesn't know. And therefore, he can't actually forgive it. I might have thought that in a Gezel case, he knows what was taken from him, and therefore it's possible that he could forgive it, and therefore it won't be Usur. Well, I found that a little bit difficult, but that's the statement. And then they ask, Chada mechada lo asya, so maybe you're right. I couldn't have learned all three from one of them. But maybe tesi chada mitarti. Maybe you could have listed two out of the three in the Torah, and from the commonalities of the two, you would have learned the third. And they ask, hi, Tesi, which ones would you mention? Lo lichtav rachmana la beribis. Let's say you didn't mention ribis in the Torah. V'tesi mehanach, but you would list theft and onah. Okay? And this is key. Ma lahanach shekin shalom midas. Well, that doesn't work because in the gezel case, in the theft case, and in the onah case, you didn't willingly, knowingly participate. In the ribis case, you sign on the dotted line, I'm going to pay so-and-so X amount in interest. Toma beribis to me daite, you can't extrapolate from them to ribis. I would have said ribis is mutter because everybody knows what they're doing. That's what people normally think. When you tell people that the Torah says you can't lend somebody money on interest or borrow money from someone on interest, they say, well, as long as it's above board, what's the big deal? They don't understand that it's part of this. Lo lichtav rachman alav be'onah v'teisi me'anach, you'll say, well, don't write anything about onah. And deduce it from the other two, from theft and ribis. No, because onah is different. Onah is the way of commerce, and people would have said, theft is aser for sure. Ribis is aser also, because you're getting something that you shouldn't get. But onah, that's the way sales work. Cost more, cost less, do your diligence and you're responsible. So therefore, I wouldn't have extrapolated from the others. So those three Gemaras, Rav versus Shmuel on at what, how we calculate 1/6. Rav versus Shmuel on whether you are, Rav versus Shmuel as far as whether you can waive your right to claim Onah. And this last piece that you can't extrapolate from Gezel to Ribis, right? Or Ribis to Onah. Those are the three pieces that we needed to see. And now we can ask the question of why we return Onah of 1/6.
Would shortchanging somebody, let's say, through improper weights, would that go under gezo?
So improper weights and measures is linked to onah and is brought beside it in the Gemara and in the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. It's not quite the same as this. The we're going to distinguish between different ways to cheat people. There's a difference between where you cheat somebody based on a hard fact. I walk into the store and I say, please give me a dozen eggs. And they sell me a thing that contains 11 eggs. That kind of cheating is different from where I say, sell me $10 worth of eggs, and they actually sell me $9 worth of eggs. We actually view them differently, and they have different rules. Among the rules is the 1/6 threshold, that whole thing, doesn't apply if you're talking about something that is counted or weighed or measured with precise numbers. If they do that, if they do, you know, even if I asked for 100 apples and they sold me 99, where it's way below 1/6, reverse the sale. That's the way it works. Okay, good point. So why do we return onah of 1/6? Go back to the psukim that we listed in Aleph, right? You go back to the psukim that we listed in Aleph. Where did the Torah say anything about refunding the 1/6? Right, that was Tommy's question in the first place. Right, where did the Torah say anything about 1/6? I didn't see anything about 1/6 at all. It didn't seem to say that at all. There's no clear mention of returning onah. Forget 1/6. There's no mention of returning onah. It says, don't do onah. That was all it said. That's a problem. Now, I have a separate mitzvah that entails returning something I have taken from somebody in the case of theft. But not all theft. Gezel theft. Remember, there are different kinds of theft. There's the sneak thief, geneva, and then there's gezel, where you walk up to somebody and you grab his property. If you walk up to somebody and grab his property, you have a mitzvah in the Torah, beheshev es hagzela, return the stolen item. However, as was clear in the Gemara in Samach Aleph, the third Gemara that we saw, gezel and onah are two different things. You couldn't even learn one from the other. They're not the same mitzvah, and their rules are different. The law of onah does not apply to land. How exactly that works, we have to discuss, but that's a statement. Gezel, we make no such distinction. So they're not the same thing. So the question is, I have nowhere in the psukim of onah where it says anything about returning anything. And the only model I know of is the model of theft, but theft is not the same as onah. So where did we get this idea that we're returning the difference? So that's what we're going to spend our time on for the next half hour, is several different views. All told, I believe we are going to identify five views, whether we'll get to all of them today, about how this works. Ramban is going to offer us two possibilities. Either Ramban is going to say that it is a gzeras hakasuv, it is something you can draw from the pasuk, separate from the prohibition. In other words, there's a prohibition against engaging in onah, and then there's a separate rule of refunding onah. Or it's a derabanan that is separate from the isser. Either way, the Ramban is going to say there's an isser of onah, and then separately there is a requirement of refunding. Ramban frames his question in the following way. The Mishnah, it's a Perek Daled Mishnah Test, it's found on Nunvav Amid Aleph, is going to tell us that there is no onah regarding land. That's something that we will see. We have not yet gotten there. The Gemara in Bava Metzia is going to learn that from one of the psukim. If you go back to the psukim in Aleph, in Pasuk Yud Dalid, it said, when you sell, v'chisim grumim kar lamisecha, when you sell something to your friend, o kano miyad amisecha, or you acquire from the hand of your friend, al tonu isha sachiv, do not engage in onah. So the Gemara says, the word timkaru is singular or plural? Plural, right. The word tonu at the end of the pasuk is singular or plural? Plural. Kano miyad amisecha is singular or plural? Are you sure? The truth of the matter is that this Gemara's use of singular plural is not clear to me. I think they have to be working with their miyad. Kano is to purchase or purchase, but it's not a singular or plural. There is no distinction of singular or plural that you could apply to the word kano. The only thing I can think of is that they're working with the word miyad instead of midei amisecha, miyad amisecha, but then you're not on the actor, you're on the person who's acted upon.
That's the verb type on amisecha, singular.
Yeah, the problem is that Amisecha was singular in the beginning of the pasuk, and Achiv is singular in the end of the pasuk. It doesn't work. They're doing it with the word kano, I think, but I just don't understand how. But that's what the Gemara says. It says that the message of the Gemara in Bava Basra is, well, you know what? I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. Leave aside what I said to you about singular and plural. We're not there yet. That's my mistake. Don't worry about it. If you're listening on the audio, really don't worry about it. You can rewind later. What the Gemara is saying that he's quoting right now is simply that it says, Kano miyad amisecha, you acquire from the hand of your friend. So this is talking about movable items. Therefore, we know that ona is only about movable items, because it says, O kano miyad amisecha, when you acquire from the hand of your friend. That's the Gemara. So Ramban says, I have a problem, because what was the context for ona in the Torah? Yovel, and the refunding, the returning of land, and when you sell land. The whole thing was about land. How in the world can you look me in the eye and say that there's no onah for land? That doesn't work. That's the Ramban's question. I brought you the Ramban on the sheet in Sur Zion, but I don't want to get bogged down in going through it here, because it'll take more time to read it through. But that, you can trust me or you can read it. That's his question. So Ramban offers us first one answer and then a second answer. His first answer isn't directly relevant for us, but if you go back to the Psukim, the way he does it is, he says, you know the way to read it? Pasuk Yudalid, sentence 14. When you sell to your friend or you purchase from the hand of your friend, don't engage in onah. So he says that's the one that's about movables, because it says from your friend's hand. Then Tezvav Tezayin, sentences 15 and 16, that talk about the field and the number of years and so on, those are talking about fields. And then, Pasuk Yudzayin, sentence 17, don't engage in onah, that's actually talking about verbal abuse, using your strength against another with words. That's Ramban's first approach. I don't really understand why that would help us. I mean, I understand why it would help us in the sense that it would isolate onah and fields, but I wouldn't understand at all why in the middle of the laws of Yovel and returning fields, you would throw in the law of Onah about movables. How did it end up in the middle of the paragraph? Before Pasuk Yudalid, they were talking about returning fields in Yovel. After Pasuk Yudalid, they're talking about returning fields in Yovel. And in the middle, you just decided to say, hey, by the way, there's a law of Onah regarding movable items. I find this a very difficult pasuk, a very difficult read. But Ramban's second answer is the one that's directly germane for us. Ramban's second answer is that there is an isser for land. There is an isser for land. There's no obligation to refund regarding land. In other words, his question was, how can you tell me there's no onah for land? The law of onah appears regarding land in the Torah. And the answer is, you're right. You're not allowed to do onah for land. However, if you did it, you don't have to refund the 1/6. And what he says is, the Isser is separate from the law of refunding or canceling the sale, and the Isser will apply to land. The Shita Mekubetzes in Bava Basra Ayin Zayin also quotes this from Rabbeinu Yonah, that the Torah's context in Bahar makes it clear that Onah does in fact apply to land. It's just the Chazara that does not, just the refunding that doesn't. Land does not have the obligation of refunding. Why not? So Ramban says the following, and here I will take you into his words, because it's worth seeing it inside. In source Zion, he says, Vani Choshev, it's midway through source Zion. Vani Choshev od Svara. I think there's another logical thing you could say. Shavadai hama'an eschaver ladas over belav. If you knowingly do this to somebody else, you violate a prohibition, baby metal and baby karkos. I don't care if it's movable items or land. Shebahen dibrakos of al tonu ishes achiv, bimispar shonim acharai ovel. That's what the Torah said. Don't do this. Don't commit onah. According to the number of years after Yovel, that's what you're going to sell and so on. Shu mazir sheyiknu v'yimkru lefi hashanim v'lo yonu v'yishas achiv, saying that you buy and sell based on the number of years. Avo rabosenu chidshu be'onah tashlumim b'shtus hamekach. The Rabbanan gave us this chidush, this novelty of onah, saying that it will be based on 1/6 of the item's worth, that there's onah, and bitul mekach biyarsim ishtus, at more than 1/6 you refund it, umizeh bilvad miyatu akarkos, and that was what they excluded land from. The reason why is because people forgive it. When it's a sale of land, people will forgive it even if it's more than a sixth. Just like they forgive regarding movables at less than a sixth. Even though you're not allowed to do it knowingly. But people won't nullify their transaction on that basis. So Ramban's approach first is to say that for land, you get more than a sixth. Because people are often valuing land by more than a sixth. I can tell you that right now. Houses, the price of houses in Thornhill is absolutely bizarre. People can be off by more than a sixth. That's a whole other discussion. Don't extrapolate anything from that line. And the Chachamim learned this. He said, this is learned from the Pasuk. Because the Pasuk says, when you sell, O Kano, or buy, Davra Niknim Yad Liyad, a movable item, Al Tonu Yishasachiv, do not engage in Ona. That tells me there's a law for movables that isn't regarding land. And that is returning the money. So in other words, what Ramban says in this approach is to say that O Kano Miyad tells us there's a difference between land and the rest. What is the difference? The Pasuk doesn't say. But I know it's returning the sixth. That's one approach. So you asked me, where does returning at 1/6 come from? Returning the 1/6? The answer is Gzeres HaKasuv. It's because the Pasuk says land and movables are different, and I know that what it's trying to tell me is they're different in terms of the refunding of the 1/6.
So according to the Rambam, then it's not just the excess that you don't have to return, but the Mekop is good as well.
Correct. So correct.
There are some reasons in secular law. So first of all, most agreements of purchase and sale, there is a difference with land, it'll say more or less. But also one of the reasons they give is, I mean, it's not straightforward, but among the reasons why sometimes if you buy something and it's actually less land, that it's still good and the purchaser doesn't have a remedy, is because you look at the property, inspect the house, you like the backyard, you saw it, so you got what you...
Right.
You know,
so there's a lot to discuss about that.
Yeah.
There's a lot to discuss about that. I'm not going to go into that now, but yes, there's a lot to be said about that, as well as who you show it to evaluate it. And then he says, you know what? Maybe this is actually an asmachta. Asmachta, in shorthand, is it's a derabanan, which is in line with the ideals of the pasuk, and we link it to the pasuk, but fundamentally it's not dictated by the pasuk. There are better ways to define asmachta, but that's going to have to do as a 5-second explanation. He says, ki halav azhara bein bekarak bein metalton. The prohibition applies to land and to movables alike. V'chazaras hamamon biyadam kabbalah bein metalton v'la bekarkos. And they had a tradition that you only refund the money when it comes to movables, not when it comes to land. And that's the principle. And he goes on with it. The point that I want to draw from this is fundamentally that he is splitting the Isser and the obligation to refund the land. The Isser is one thing, and that'll to refund the money, sorry. The Isser is one thing, and it applies to all products. The obligation to refund the 1/6 is not applicable to land and is in fact a separate thing. Maybe learned from the Pasuk, and maybe Asmachta. But that's the way he looks at it. Are we clear? We understand that. Okay. Now, that distinction may also be seen in the debate of whether there is an Isser if you do Ona at less than 1/6. I mentioned before that if it's less than 1/6, it's okay. But I said it may still be prohibited to do so. Ramban just told us, yeah, it is Asur to do so. He just says people are mochel, people forgive it. However, it's worth noting that the Sefer HaChinuch does not say that. If you take a look at the Sefer HaChinuch in Source Ches, he says, "Va'over al zeh va'asa ona l'chaveru l'das b'shtus ha'yoser over alav zeh." If you knowingly do ona at 1/6 or more, you violate the prohibition. Aval b'pachos mishtus, but at less than a sixth. He tiru zichronim levracha lehistaker letagar mipnei tikun ayishuv. But less than 1/6, they permitted a merchant to do. The merchant is allowed to make money that way because this is the way society needs to function. That people can find their needs everywhere. In other words, if you were to say you even at less than a sixth are in violation, the result would be a chilling effect on commerce. I wouldn't go into business. I have to worry about that. Forget it. And the result is people wouldn't be able to buy the things that they want. So therefore, for the sake of keeping business running, we're gonna forgive it at that level. And the Chacham, it seems like an act of the Chachamim is what he's saying. So what we have here is the Sefer HaChinuch saying that less than 1/6 is actually fine, which is fascinating because when it came to the sale of land, the Sefer HaChinuch agreed. Right? The Sefer HaChinuch regarding land said it's asur. You just don't have the law of the refund at 1/6. Right? The law of refund doesn't apply regarding land. He was willing to split the isur and the refund. When it comes to the 1/6, to less than 1/6, he does not. He says less than 1/6 is going to be mutter. Rav Asher Weiss discusses this a little bit in terms of ways to distinguish between less than 1/6 and land. It's an interesting thing in its own right. It's also worth seeing Imre Yosher, which I didn't put on the sheet, but Imre Yosher Chelek Beis Kuf Yud, who tries to link the less than 1/6 with Daito Lahachzir, to say that just like we say, oh no, it may not apply if the seller plans to refund him the difference, that maybe it won't apply there as well, and he brings in Evan Ozel. There's a whole discussion there. The Pesach Choshen brings it too, but I'm not going to go into it. I think we have enough to handle in the direct material. Ramban's idea of separating the Isser from the requirement of refund and saying there's an Isser even if there is no requirement of refund may explain the Rush's odd position. And we spent a lot of time on this in the prep time, but I'm not going to spend so much time on it now because there's a lot still to see. But the basic problem of the Rush is that in the discussion on Memtes, in which Rav and Shmuel debate what the threshold is for refunding, how do I calculate the 1/6, the Rush says, we're going to follow Shmuel. Because this is a financial issue, the rule is when Rav and Shmuel debate, if it's a financial issue, we follow Shmuel. If it's an Isser issue, then we follow Rav. Right? That's the basic machlokes between the two of them. So the Rush says, well, the decision about how to calculate 1/6 will follow Shmuel because it's a financial matter. And also there's a brisa that supports him, and so it appears from cases in the Gemara. Then, in the discussion about whether you're allowed to waive Ona'ah, the Rush paskins like Rav and says, well, this is an Isser matter. And so I'm going to follow Rav. Why does the Rush call Ona Mamon in the first one and Isser in the second one? So you could answer it based on Ramban, right? To say, in the first case, he's talking about the level at which you have to return it. However, Ramban says, even if you don't have a chiyuv to return it, it's still Isser. So therefore, there is no ramification in the debate between Rav and Shmuel about whether it's Isser or Mutter. Rav and Shmuel are going to agree it's Isser. The only question is a financial question. Do I have to refund it or not? So therefore, it's financial. Whereas the second discussion is, do you waive it? Can you waive it or not? That's actually about whether it's Isser or Mutter. And therefore, that's Isser. So therefore, I'm going to follow Rav. It all is nice and neat at that stage until you get to Rav Gustman in the Kuntresei Shiurim. And the Kuntresei Shiurim says, I have a problem because there's a third piece in the Rush. I didn't put the Kuntresei Shiurim on it because that would have meant retyping, and I didn't have the time to retype him. So I didn't give it to you there. But if you want, I have a PDF that I can email you. But the Kuntresei Shiurim in Bav Mitzia Chav Beis Aleph asks the question. He says there's a third piece in the Rush, which I brought you in source Yud Aleph, and there he is open to the idea that there is an Isser even below the threshold for returning it. He says you could look at it either way. Maybe there is an Isser if it's below the threshold, and maybe there is not an Isser if it's below the threshold. Well, if you're saying that there is an Isser below the threshold for returning, then you call it Mammon. If you say there's no Isser when you're below the threshold for returning, then it should be Isser, right? Sorry? If there is an Isser, then the only debate between Rav and Shmuel in the beginning is do you have to return or not? A purely financial thing. But if you take the view that there is no isser when you're below the threshold, then what they're debating is there an isser at all? In which case you should follow Rav. So the Kundrasei Shiurim has an approach to it, and he says that the Rush called it mammon because he was speaking within the view that there is an isser when it's not at the level of returning it. But as far as the view that there is no isser, Shmuel still has the Braisa supporting him. The Rush said, I follow Shmuel because it's mammon, but he also said, I follow Shmuel because there's a Braisa like him. So even if the answer is that it's really an Isser discussion, I still have that to fall back on. The fact that there's a Braisa supporting Shmuel. So that's what the Kundrasei Shiurim says he was doing. One other note within this view of Ramban splitting the Isser from the Hachazara. The Rav Asher Weiss, in the piece that I noted for you, I gave you the link to the piece by Rav Weiss in Yud Beis. It's in Hebrew, and that's why I came out with all those weird characters. But Rav Asher Weiss notes that Ramban's idea of splitting the Isser and the obligation to return the item is also seen in Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim Brisker on the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Tezvav, Halacha Aleph, asks a question. Let's say I'm going back to my case from before, I sold Pesach, something that was worth 5, and I sold it for him for 6. Pesach finds out, he hauls me into Beis Din and says, hello, he overcharged me, it's Ona. Beis Din says, Torchiner, give him one back. Why am I not entitled to say, I only wanted to sell this at a price of 6? If you're going to force me to accept 5, I'm going to say that wasn't what I intended. Fraud! Mekachtos! I should be able to back out. I should cancel the whole sale and find some other victim.
He said, I know that was not like Ribbis.
Yeah.
Ribbis and Rav on both the borrower and the lender.
Correct.
So here, the person who did the selling is on his
own. Yeah. So that's but I can just walk away. I can say, I didn't get the money I thought I was going to get. I sold it assuming that I was getting $6 for it. I didn't get $6. Fine, so I'll sell it to somebody else. Somebody who won't mind.
So let me
just walk away. It's a mekachtos. The whole thing was fraud. I thought that I was going to get 6 for it. Now I'm cheated. Let me just return it. Return the money.
Protection to the buyer only in this case.
Yeah.
Protection to the seller.
But it's not a matter of the laws of Onah. I should be able to get what I expected to get, and otherwise I should be able to walk away. It's a free world. So his answer is that the refund is separate from the transaction. This is Rav Chaim's idea. That the transaction is complete at the price that you wanted. You wanted 6 and you got 6. And now you have a separate obligation. Go pay him $1. You got exactly what you wanted. You cannot claim. It's a bizarre idea. Lufianius Daiti. You wanted 6, you got 6. In the same way, this is now my extension to try to maybe explain it. In the same way that if I bought a cow and then lightning struck and it hit the cow, I can't come back to you and complain. Too late. It's my problem. So too, if I sold it to you for 6, you gave me 6, and then, oh no, you have to go pay him $1. It's not refunding him from the sale. It's not part of the transaction. It's a separate obligation that you now have. Go pay him $1. You got hit by lightning. So there he goes. That's the way that he seems to look at it. Adam.
Rav Asher Weiss has a claim in his piece that those can't happen unless it's a Gufadavar.
Yeah. I wasn't going to get to it, so...
So, but this is not a Gufadavar.
Right. It's an external thing. Right. So that's all within the view that explains how did I get here? How did I get from the law of Onah to a refund? The answer is the refund is separate from the prohibition. It may be in the Pasuk, it may be in Asmachta, but it's separate from the prohibition. Next approach is the Pnei Yoshua. And the Pnei Yoshua says, no, this is actually the theft thing. That which we initially considered and discarded is what the Bnei Yoshua says.
Is Rav Chaim based that beyond what the Rush is saying, conceptually, that the disentangle allowed from the financial part?
Well, I think that's inherent in what he's saying.
Yeah.
I didn't go into the Rav Chaim to see, but I took Rav Asher Weiss's word for it. But I think that's it. I think that principle is inherent in it. I would be kind of surprised if he didn't.
So Rav Chaim, if you did not, if if one did not agree with the Rosh, another would have to be problematic.
Yeah. The Pnei Yehoshua offers a different approach. He says it's a function of theft. He says, just like we have a law of Ehesheb es Hagzela, it's in Source Yud Gimel on your sheet, but I'm not going to read it inside, again, in the interest of time. But just like we have this principle of Ehesheb es Hagzela, go return the stolen item, so too, we have a mitzvah of refunding this, refunding the onah. Rav Asher Weiss explains that according to the Pnei Yehoshua, the pasuk of b'mispart shnei tivuos yimkar lach lefi rov hashanim, according to the number of crops, right? According to the number of years, that's the source of the general mitzvah regarding land. That's the general mitzvah, and then the Torah is saying, so you're going to have to refund it to him. The truth of the matter is, the Pnei Yehoshua didn't invent this. This seems to be in the Torah. If you take a look at Source Yudalid, the Tur writes regarding Onah, Ve'in Lokin Alav, no Malkos, Lefisha Bechlal, Lab de Lo Tigzolhu, it's included in the prohibition of Lo Tigzol, Dinitan Lehi Shavon, because it is up for refunding. Shama'ana Eschavero, Chayav Lahachziro, because if you engage in Onah to somebody, you have to pay it back. That's the principle that the Tur states. The Tur says, it's included in Lo Sigzol. Now, let me unpack for a second what it is that he's saying. What the Torah is trying to say is this. The Torah says normally, if you engage in a prohibition, you violate a prohibition, you get Malkos, right? Basic rule. That's straightforward. What the Torah also, what we also know, though, is that in the event that you engage in a prohibition, you violate a prohibition, but the violating the prohibition creates a new mitzvah for you. You now a mitzvah of, you violated the prohibition, therefore I want you to do X. Then you just do X. No malkos are involved. You follow? So the classic example is the Karban Pesach. If I leave the Karban Pesach over after Chatzos, after midnight on Pesach night, then what's the rule? What am I supposed to do? Burn. Not until midnight, Ad Boker, whatever Ad Boker means. But the rule is, you burn it. So you don't get lashes for having left over the Korban Pesach. You just burn it. That's your assay. It's called a lav hanitak la'asay, a prohibition which is cut off by the assay. So too, by theft, you steal something. All right? So, not all right, but now you have a new assay, which is v'heshev es hagzela, go return it. So the lav, the prohibition, is cut off by a new mitzvah, by an assay. So the Torah says, this is like with theft. You can pay it back. Now, it's not so clear. Don't buy into everything I'm saying yet. But it's a little more complex than that. But that's what the Pnei Yehoshua sounds like he is saying. Now, the truth is, there are two different ways to understand what the Torah does. If you look in Tesvav, the Beis Yosef says, on the Torah statement, Perish shedome lelav delo sigzol. It's like the prohibition of theft. It's not really the prohibition of theft. It's like it. Why? Because you're now what you're supposed to do is go refund the onah, as opposed to the language of the Prisha in Soris Tezayin, who says lefisha bichlalo sixolhu perisha gam zeg gizelahu. He says, yeah, this is also an act of stealing. You got more money from him than you were supposed to, or you got the item for less than you were supposed to pay. That is theft. The two are one and the same. You follow? So the Prisha understands the two to be saying onah is theft. The Beis Yosef understands him to say it's like theft. It resembles it. The Rav Chaim seems to assume like the Pnei Yehoshua, saying that lo sonu makes it a form of lo tigzol. I brought it in Yud Zayin, where the Grach says, yesh listapik be'onah. There's room for doubt regarding onah. There are two ways to take it. He says, one way to take it is Hatara Gilsa Diesh Kan Lekichas Isur. The Torah is saying, hey, this is prohibited. You're not allowed to do this onah thing. Didas Kazay no Chashuv Das, because the other partner in the transaction didn't really know what he was getting into. Viesh Kan Maisa Gzela, there's an act of theft. Valakichi Be Isur, you took the item inappropriately. Oh, alternatively, Dalya De Masha Asra Hatara Onah Belav Delo Sonu Zemashvias Onah Ligzela. The second approach is to say that when the Torah says this is prohibited, because it says lo sonu, don't do it, that makes it into theft. In other words, the first approach is, it's not, it is theft. It's straightforward. Any 2-year-old could have understood that onah is theft because you're cheating somebody. The other way that he says is, no, it's not really under theft, it's commerce. However, the Torah says don't do it, and therefore it's like theft. And the Grach, Reb Chaim, says it can't be the first approach. It can't be this is really theft, because we saw the Gemara on Daf Samach Aleph, which said you couldn't have deduced onah from theft. If it was really one and the same, there would have been no issue. So he says it's got to be the second approach. When the Torah says lo sonu, that converts this into a form of theft. Either way, he's adopting the formula of the Pnei Yoshua and the Tur, which is to say, this really is like theft, and that's what's driving the refund. However, there's a lot more we have to say about this, and I'm looking at the time, and it's already 11:27. So what I'm going to do is summarize what we've said, and we're going to have to pick up with it next week. But what we said after our initial outline of the psukim and the issues that are involved in onah, we saw the debates between Rav and Shmuel about how you calculate 1/6, as well as the debate about whether you can waive onah. We saw also the Gemara that says that onah and gezel are two different things. You can't deduce one from the other. Each one needs its own pasuk. So we started the question of why you return onah of 1/6. We saw Ramban. Ramban says it's separate from the Isser. There's a prohibition of onah, and then there's a requirement of returning the 1/6. Maybe that's from the psukim, and maybe that's an asmachta. That's Ramban. We noted as well the Sefer HaChinuch, who accepts that kind of a split when it comes to land, but doesn't accept it if you do it for less than 1/6. We also noted that this would solve the rush, because then it would explain why in the argument about how you determine 1/6 that could be considered mammon, a financial discussion. Because if he believes that it's usur even when it's less than 1/6, that would explain why the discussion of how to calculate 1/6 is purely a financial discussion. They're not debating whether it's usur or not. And so that would explain why he followed Shmuel there, as opposed to when it was debatable whether you can waive it or not. That's Isser. And we saw the idea from Reb Chaim to support the idea of splitting the Isser from the obligation to refund the money. Regarding this idea that the ma'ane, the person who engaged, no, I can't cancel the deal. And then the last thing we saw was we started the Pnei Yoshua suggestion that it's a function of gezela, that it's either is gezel or it's like gezel. We saw apparent support for this from Reb Chaim. There's much more to say about this Pnei Yoshua, and then we also want to see the approach of the Kutras Shiurim and Rav Asher Weiss, and maybe even the approach of the Sha'arei Yosher. We'll have to see. That'll all be part of next week's Shiur, God willing, Friday at 10:30. And I also want to discuss there the point that I made reference to earlier, the idea that 1/6, the idea that onah is specifically where you cheat somebody. Because one of the things that I have to make sure to note is that there are two separate prohibitions, one of cheating people and the other of price gouging, above board price gouging. So that will also have to be part of our conversation, God willing, next week. Thank you very much for participating in our opening shiur. I hope you will continue.